Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Courtesy of Court podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Osgood. You know, it's always fun to start your day talking about something as amazing as ice cream, right? So hopefully you guys get to enjoy this in the morning as much as I do, and as much as I did when I was recording this interview. I spoke with Daniel Nicholson. He is the man behind Not a Moo. He's leading the charge behind one of the most iconic brands of ice cream that is dairy-free. You guys have probably seen it in the grocery store. I believe he said they were in something like 10,000 stores across the country. I could be wrong on that quote. He does say it at the end of the pod, but the point is they are literally everywhere. And then they also have an e-commerce platform. So if you haven't had a chance to try it, definitely go and try it because, oh my goodness, wait until you hear some of the flavor profiles they have. But even more than that, there's such a cool aspect to this company because they were the ones like behind the dairy-free movement back in the day. Like they were doing it before it was even a thing. So really interesting to hear that side of things. And because they've been around for so many years, I kind of asked them, hey, Daniel, what is the secret to success here? So make sure you stay tuned and listen to that because I think there were some wise words in there. And for anyone that's starting a business or considering it, definitely make sure that you listen to those words. They are tried and true. I can also attest. Really great stuff. So I hope you guys enjoy. Please welcome Daniel Nicholson, the man behind Not a Moo. Hey, Daniel, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Doing well, Courtney. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. All right. So I'm really excited to talk to you because I need to know the backstory first and foremost.
Yeah. The company was founded in 2005. By our founder, Amy, who wanted to create a dairy-free ice cream product for her sister, who had just been diagnosed with pretty severe lactose intolerance. I got involved with the company in 2008, about 3 years later, very early stage. We were probably in about 100 stores or so of distribution at the time when I joined. And what really drew me to the company was just the product and the brand and really the work that the founder was on a mission to do. Really, you know, I mean, our product is lower in sugar, lower in calories, tastes just like ice cream and doesn't use any dairy, right? And I at that time, back in 2008, and that really predates the dairy-free movement, the plant-based movement, all the things that we talk about so openly today. But I think just trying the product and kind of hearing the story and wanting to be a part of that positive impact on society as we all continue to indulge in dessert is really what caused me to want to get started. And so I jumped on board in 2008. Kind of started taking care of the books. My background's in mechanical engineering, not necessarily accounting, but that's how much I love the product and really saw the upside potential of the brand. So 2008, jumped in head first, have not looked back. In 2011, I started running the company. The founder no longer wanted to be involved in the business, and I decided to step into the leadership role and continue propelling the company forward.
Well, that's amazing. And, you know, you touched on it just briefly, but I do feel like you guys were a good, like 10 years, I feel like, ahead of this whole, you know, health movement that we're seeing now and that everybody seems to be talking about now. So how do you feel about that? Are you glad that people are talking about it now? Or are you like, okay, guys, it's a little bit of old news at this point? Or how does it like, what do you think about it now?
Well, I mean, as anybody who pioneers any movement, right? Like you, yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad that some of the early work that we did there before anybody knew what it meant to eat ice cream that didn't have dairy. I think we're extremely proud of that. We're extremely proud to have come on early to the scene to begin to educate and inform the consumer around the concept that dairy isn't for all of us. And in fact, if we consume less of it or eradicate it completely from our diet, the net benefit to the planet and to overall society is extremely positive and impactful. And so, yeah, we definitely were early. It made the work the work at the onset that much more challenging. But
I can imagine. Yeah.
But yeah, once more people are on board with the movement and more clearly understand the work that we've been doing for so long, I think we have that much more of a positive reputation to the movement, right? Like people totally trust us. The people who have been consuming us for years or who have just discovered us, it's a lot easier to trust a brand who was at the forefront of the movement. And I think that's what's important to us. It's important to us is that people are changing the way that they live and the way that they consume because, we care about the sustainability of our planet.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. And you know what I think too, and I feel like more and more, and maybe it's the older and more education that there is out there, the older I get, the more that I understand, but I do feel like that there's more and more dairy intolerance. Even mm-hmm. for myself personally, I'm not lactose intolerant, but mm-hmm. I definitely have a sensitivity because if I have too much, I can just, my stomach is not great. My boyfriend, the same thing, like can have a little bit, but it's like, there needs to be, you know, a limit. And I feel like you hear that more and more now than I think you ever have.
Yeah, I mean, that's very true. And I think just over time, whether it's like an evolutionary trait or it's something that, as the dairy industry continued to be more and more industrialized and larger factory farms were in place, the processes and systems that they put in place to produce more and more dairy in a more and more unnatural way.
Yeah.
There could be a variety of reasons. There's probably quite a bit of evidence out there that indicates that a lot of what changed to make dairy less natural than it was back in the old days, along with our own, human biology and our evolutionary makeup, I think. I don't think we were meant to consume dairy, right? There's all sorts of memes going around in the plant-based community, like, why, like humans were not put on the planet to breastfeed off of cows, right? Like
yeah.
it should be pretty clear. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes a good picture or
right, like that image to
be like, whoa, that's what I'm doing. I think there should be no surprise that more and more people are beginning to identify the fact that it just does not agree with them. There are plenty of other milk-like products that come from other, plant sources that mm-hmm. taste just as good or better. They provide a different, they provide a different flavor note. They provide different flavor values for different applications that I think make it, those to me are much more acceptable formats to be consuming milk. It's not weird to eat a coconut. It's not weird to eat a cashew. It's not weird to eat an almond. These are, very natural plant-based foods that don't have to be factory farmed,
right?
To be milked or turned into milk and consumed.
Right. No, that makes sense. So speaking of flavors, tell me about some of the flavors that you guys offer. Give me the good stuff. I want to know too, like the evolution of that. Like I know, obviously, so you've been around for a little while. So I know you started out with a couple of flavors and obviously have grown the portfolio. So tell me about the flavors that you have right now.
Yeah. We have 20 plus flavors.
Oh my God. That's way more than I thought.
Yeah.
We
started the brand when I first got involved in 2008, I believe we had we're just launching like a fifth flavor and it mm-hmm. was mint, creamy coconut, which no longer exists anymore. We had maple pecan, which is my favorite flavor. That's my ice cream bane right there. We had chocolate and vanilla, right? Like those were some of our initial SKUs. For us, where we stand right now, some 16 years later, we're still really focused on those foundational flavors because those are the ones that sell the best in the mass market. And as you go through a period like a pandemic, you realize that the productivity of each individual SKU is highly, highly important. So we're still very focused on like, okay, what are we missing, right? Now we have our cookies and cream, we have our caramel cold brew and cookies. So we're trying to hit all of those foundational flavors and make sure that every single SKU we put on the shelf is highly productive. But we do have a lot of fun with new, you know, with new concepts. We had a banana caramel crunch. Marshmallow Stardust. One of our, yeah, it's probably one of my favorite, like most creative SKUs, just like the incorporation of the concept of Stardust, right? Getting very, getting very planetary there. Mm-hmm. I think we like to launch those flavors too, to excite our loyal consumer base, to just, you know, to constantly have an opportunity to try something new. And it's also a way to grab new consumers who are just a little more adventurous, in their selections. So it's those more out there flavors are more marketing. And it's kind of more marketing focused, marketing centric SKUs. We've also jumped into seasonals, right? This year we launched a pumpkin pie for the fall season. Mm-hmm. And then we have our peppermint bark SKU that we launch in the winter season, kind of right on the on the tail end of pumpkin pie. And so I think, again, those are very seasonal specific, and also gives our team another opportunity to talk about new flavor launches, which are, it's important to remain relevant, you know, to have something to talk about. And you know, and ultimately just always thinking of the customer and what is it that they want right now? How can we provide value and something, you know, something indulgent, a nice indulgent treat for them to partake in whatever time of year.
I love that. And, you know, that makes me kind of think, so because you've had so many different flavor launches and things throughout the years, was there anything that you launched that you knew would like do fine, but like just totally blew up? And then on the flip side, anything that you launched that like didn't really perform as well as you thought, and for whatever reason?
Yeah, that stuff happens all the time. You know, for instance, our caramel cold brew and cookies was, it was a great idea. We looked at a lot of consumer data. We know that having a coffee flavor ice cream SKU is important. So we wanted to spruce that concept up. And it had a very good start out of the gate. And then over time, we just really saw it begin to kind of slow down in productivity. So I guess that's an example of one that, like, you know, you have really high hopes for. Everybody who tastes it and samples it is like, wow, this is incredible. My new favorite flavor. And then over time, I don't know, people just go back to mint, vanilla, you know, chocolate, the basics, cookies and cream. And then there's like, I guess our seasonals have been a really bright spot, right? Like, I mean, peppermint ice cream doesn't really appeal to me. Pumpkin ice cream doesn't really appeal to me, but we really have found that, you know, because of the way people maneuver through the holidays, really finding something that's very, very much in theme with the holiday, you know, we've seen really solid sales out of those seasonal items. And we're still, even 16 years later, still going through learning phases, right? Flavors really resonate with the widest swath of consumers. It'll be never ending, because the evolution of the consumer palate is also never ending. And the trends that they buy into and pull away from, and it's always interesting.
I was going to say, I feel like you look at the landscape of society just in general right now, 16 years ago. I mean, we're talking, it's not even apples to apples. I mean, just with like things like social media and the whole rise of everyone having a platform. I mean, literally marketing and consumer behavior is just vastly different. So I would imagine that you guys do, you have to keep up. So you're constantly learning, which is incredible. And that leads me to my next question. So a lot of guests that come on the podcast are often new founders or new businesses, or maybe they've been around for a couple of years. So given your experience and your background, you know, you've done this for so long now, what do you think is the secret to success?
Grit, just pure grit. It's, I think grit and consistency, there's nothing really fabulous about, you know, about spending 13 years in a very difficult industry like CPG. Mm-hmm. I think really leaning into your own mental toughness, your own, your own personal grid and staying motivated, staying inspired, making sure that you still feel the same way about the brand or the product today that you did when you got started. Like, constantly re-inspiring and motivating yourself is absolutely key. I think that's what I've had to lean into for, sometimes it's incredible for me to think about, wow, like I have been in this industry that I had no idea that I would ever be a part of for 13 years, and literally in startup mode and, building a team, seeing, team members transition in and out, riding the wave of positive progress in sales and distribution, and then, maybe losing some distribution. Like, you have to be able to roll with anything and everything that's thrown at you. And I think ultimately that's why it's so important to make sure that as you're getting started or as you are in the earlier stage of business, that you know wholeheartedly that you are so passionate about the work that you are doing, that no matter what happens 5, 10 years, 15 years down the road, you'll be able to lean back into that and remind yourself why you got going.
Yep, that's great. That's great advice. So where can people find you? I know that you're in all kinds of retail. Are you also online? Tell us where we can find more about you.
Yeah, so we are, definitely take a trip to our website. It's www.nadamu.com. A lot of information on the brand, the company, team member photos, all sorts of fun stuff. But we have an e-commerce platform where you can go pick your top nine flavors that you want to put in a box that you want to have delivered to your doorstep. So that's like a really cool and fun way to try any and all flavors that we have in production right now. You can also find us in about 10,000 grocery stores nationwide. We have fairly solid distribution. For a point of reference, there's probably 40,000 plus grocery stores across the country, of which we're in a solid, 20-25% of them. And so a good way to find us in your area is, again, go to our website, go to our find in stores page, and put your zip code in, put your address in, and it'll pop up. It'll populate all of the stores that are nearest to you.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Daniel. This was a lot of fun to get to know a little bit of the backstory about Nadamu. And I mean, even before speaking with you, I knew about the brand. I've seen it myself before. And so I was very familiar. So I really appreciate you taking the time. This was a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, thank you so much, Courtney. This was fun for me too. I appreciate you having me.
Thanks again so much for listening, guys. This has been another episode of the Courtesy of Court podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Osgood, and I will talk to you next time.